people don't get a chance to see these small, kind things that you do for people. I know what they say about you in the press, but it doesn't matter to me because I know the real you, because you're amazing. Wow. That's what the press needs. They should call you the Amazing Spider-Man. You like that, Spidey? Good. Because today is going to be amazing.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Rewind. This episode is picking right back up where we left off in our last episode as we recap the original Spider-Man trilogy. In this episode, myself, Chris, and our special guest Aaron are recapping the two Amazing Spider-Man films that followed the trilogy by rebooting the franchise. If you haven't yet checked out our last episode, do us a favor and hit that download button so you can get the full effect of our conversation and stay tuned next week as we'll be back to give our review of Spider-Man Homecoming and wrap up our own trilogy of Spider-Man episodes. And with that, let's get on with the show.
Well, transitioning into the Amazing Spider-Man, the first one, it kind of felt like, okay, we did such a good job of building up the lizard in these first two movies.
First two movies, yeah.
Some people might think that this is a continuation. It felt like they took some of that stock in there the lizard from the first, even though it's not the same guy, it's not the same people, not the same setting.
Yeah.
It felt like, oh, I remember that guy because I saw him two movies ago.
Yeah, and he's, you know, people, and at the time, people didn't have Wikipedia, the really quick search everything. But if you went to a comic stores were getting booming, you'd have people come in there, okay, who's this character? And the store owners would explain who they are. They'd buy the comics or they'd buy the issues, get refreshed, and now they're waiting for the movie.
Uh-huh.
And they did that for, you know, people did it for Doc Ock, they did it for Venom, they did it for Sandman, and it just...
Okay, so let's just jump right in here to the Amazing Spider-Man films.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't planning on spending too much time on these movies, but we can talk about it. And if it's long enough, hell, we might even make this a separate episode. I don't know yet. But,
goddamn.
Yeah. Okay, so in Amazing Spider-Man, when that was coming out, do you think they should not have done a reboot, per se, and just continued on not doing an origin story?
I heard about the reboot. When the news first dropped, I heard about the reboot, and my thought was, that doesn't make sense because this is only...
Yeah, it was very... Was it?
Four or five, three
it was very
years
recent from
after
part three.
Part eight. I was like, this is too soon. This is way too soon. And then you start seeing reports of, oh, they want to bring in the lizard. And again, I'm just like, it's still too soon.
We just had him in the last two movies.
It didn't make sense. So I was really on the fence. I did not want to see this. But then they did the teaser where like it was like very parkourish to the buildings, the teaser. And you see the reflection as he's jumping on the building. Very, what's the game? Mirror's Edge.
Yeah.
Very Mirror's Edge. And I was a little bit sold because I figured, you know, that's something that was missing in the first trilogy. That was missing in Raimi's thing was the agility. Was, you know, him at the acrobatics. He did a few flips in the first trilogy, but it wasn't him fighting like Spider-Man. It was him
I think the
dodging.
Best, the best fight scene that I think he was doing to show Spider-Man being Spider-Man... Was there is it was part of the montage when he first became Spider-Man, and there's like four or five criminals robbing a truck or something.
No,
and he's like bouncing off of all of them.
No, they're he's stalking Mary Jane, and the criminals he jumps down, does the backflips because they're trying to rob Mary Jane in the rain.
No, before all that.
Oh, before that,
this is when he's just there. It's like it's the montage scene where he's like just going doing different things, and he's like doing like he like jumps on one guy's head and does a flip, and he bounces off two other guys.
Yeah, that's when he's about to rescue Mary Jane in the rain.
Because
the first time you're seeing guys get webbed off screen, and then it shows cops looking up, and they're already webbed. But everything happens off screen.
I'm getting confused because I watched like four or five different Spider-Man movies this like 2 days.
But what you're talking about is like it happens in the rain because he's like in the dark, and Mary Jane's trying to figure out who he is.
Yeah.
And he's doing like the Frankensteiner. He does like a Hurricane Rana. He does like all these like wrestling.
Well, anyway, things. That's my point. My point is that's the only thing that I can think of fighting wise.
That and in On the Burning Building when Goblin's throwing the darts at him.
But that's kind of slow mo and it's so Hollywood looking. And
but he's dodging though. But he's still dodging it though acrobatically. But yeah, that's really the only acrobats we got in the films. We didn't really get that much, you know, for him.
We didn't really get that much first person viewing of him actually swinging through the webs either. I think there was one car chase scene in part two that was leading to Peter Parker trying to go to see Mary Jane's play, and he's riding on the bike and he gets run over by the criminals.
Yeah.
And that's probably the only scene that I remember where you get a first hand viewing of Peter actually.
Yeah, he does like a backflip.
Peter and it was an aerial swinging, the aerial shot of
him like swinging through the
first person backflip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really... So that kind of got my attention. The suit. The first movie, I was not a big fan of the 3D webbing on the suit. Not a big fan of that.
That was a con, overall con of the whole... Like, I get how he made his suit.
Mm-hmm.
But how did he... That's like machine... Precision. That's like precision machine etched.
Yeah.
How did he get that?
I mean, if they're not going to let him invent web shooters... How is he going to make a suit that's that detailed? How's he going to do that? That just didn't make sense.
Kind of the same thing with the suit in Amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, how did he... Like, I get it, like, he's ordering parts online and things like that.
And, like, he's looking at textures.
He broke up sunglasses and sewed on the glasses.
He's looking at textures of basketballs and, like, wetsuits and, like, you know, conditioning and stuff like that, which I liked. I thought that part was great. Leading up to it... And this is funny because at the time, my wife was pregnant. And... When they're like, oh, we're casting Emma Stone as the lead actress. I'm like, okay, she's Mary Jane again. I convinced the wife, let's name the daughter, let's name her Gwen Stacy, since they're not going to do that in the movie. And people forget part three, or they're going to forget it, so let's name the daughter Gwen Stacy. Okay, yeah, sure. We're about a month out from my daughter being born, and it leaks out, oh, Emma Stone bleached her hair blonde. She's now Gwen Stacy.
No, did the picture leaked out of her in the costume?
No,
it was later on.
It was later on. It was her with blonde hair, and she was accompanying her boyfriend Andrew Garfield to set with blonde hair, and I'm like, fuck. I'm like, damn it! And I didn't let Jen see that at all. I kept that secret.
Very good. Very good.
So then, as my daughter's being born, daughter's like, oh, you know, what's the name? We're like, Gwendolyn Stacy, we're spelling it out. Oh, it's just like Amazing Spider-Man. And Jen's what? I'm like, no, nothing.
What would a backup name have been? Elektra?
We didn't have one.
Mary Jane, right?
No, not Weed. We didn't have
Betty Brant? No.
Wait, we didn't have a backup. But there was that. So when they included that Mary Jane's being replaced... It's not Gwen Stacy. They're going with the Gwen Stacy family. That was great. Something new, not the same female character. We're getting something different. Villain is the Lizard. A very kind of mid-card kind of level villain.
But one of his first villains.
One of his very first villains. And one that pretty much can overpower him. One of his most overpowering villains.
And to the casual audience, he's the most familiar because they just saw him for the last two movies.
The last two movies, even though it's a different, different actor, it's a villain that can match Spider-Man's speed, can match his power, can match his quickness, can match his strength, can match him in all way. But this is a very ferocious looking villain.
Mm-hmm.
And going into that, I started getting sold. I'm like, okay, I'm getting sold. I started reading reviews, and the first thing that got me was. Spider-Man's doing quips. He's throwing out, you know, the trash talk during his fights. I'm like, that's great. That's what I wanted in the first movie was the trash talking. And we got in the first movie we opened up and we got that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really well done with that part of it. I didn't like the suit.
No, I didn't like the suit. I
wasn't a big fan of the suit at all. But a lot of everything else, they gave more backstory with his parents. The whole spy aspect, that was great.
The hidden subway car office deal.
If I'm not mistaken, the whole parents thing, that was relatively new in the comics as well, too, right?
That was, I want to say, late 80s, early 90s, whenever they started bringing that in, with the whole chameleon stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to a degree, that's fairly new.
I thought it was newer than that,
From comics to the movie, that was fairly new.
I was thinking there was some kind of revelation from his parents.
Yeah, like
that was more recent that they brought into that movie. Maybe I was mistaken, but
I know in Ultimate they did it, like they tried to do that again with the parents, but they turned out just to be clones. But they brought in his dad, which looked like the main Marvel Universe Peter Parker with like the split hair.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of brought his look in from that.
Oh, okay.
And that was kind of a big revelation, and they tried to do the clone saga through his parents, but that again was a big fail. Yeah. Anything involving clones is a big fail.
Yeah.
But I mean, leading up to it, I'm reading good reviews, I'm reading everything else. Andrew Garfield, I hadn't seen him in anything else.
No, I mean.
But when they did the picture of him in the suit, I'm like, he's really thin.
Mm-hmm.
And Spider-Man has always been a very lean character, very skinny, very lean character. He's not a big guy, which what Toby was. Toby put on, what, I think 30 pounds of muscle for the role. And Spider-Man's not a big guy. He's a skinny guy. He's really thin. But that's what kind of masks his strength, is that people assume that he's weak,
right,
but he's super strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought going into that, that was a good kind of, you know, acting ability that they got, or that they're able to pull out. And then you have, what the hell's his name? Captain Stacy, the guy who played him.
No, like Dennis Leary.
Yeah, Dennis Leary. Good choice.
I like him over James Cromwell.
Yeah.
And I like James Cromwell.
Yeah, James Cromwell, he was good for Babe, you know, Talking Pig. He was good for that movie. But, I mean, Dennis Leary was good. They had a lot of good choice actors. They got good actors.
Although, I'll be up front. I know I'm in the minority of this, but I don't like Emma Stone.
You don't? Was it because of the blonde hair, or was it because?
No, I just don't like her as an actress, just in general.
Because most of her movies have been like
Super Bad, Zombieland,
I guess.
Easy A.
Something about her face annoys me. I don't know what it is.
The thing that threw me off was Andrew Garfield, because my only exposure to Andrew Garfield was The Social Network, the Facebook movie.
Oh, okay.
He was in that.
She's supposed to be like high school senior or whatever, and she's got the voice like she's been smoking cigarettes for 20 years. You know, something about her
I think the blonde hair aged her. She looked much older than what she looked like because of the blonde hair.
I'm already turned off by her anyway.
And
so.
she was wearing a lot of layers of clothing.
Yeah,
it didn't show her.
I didn't mind that because it looked like Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, that did look like classic Gwen Stacy. Was all the hair.
Yeah,
I mean, was all the clothing.
But when you're looking at Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy, That's gonna make her look.
I mean, the movie before that, she did Zombieland, where she was a redhead.
Yeah.
So going into the casting thing, okay, she looks like a good Mary Jane just by the red hair alone. She looks like a good Mary Jane, but then you come find out she bleached her hair back to blonde, and she's playing Gwen Stacy. It felt very a little forced, and that part did get to me a little bit. But the reaction between her and Parker. was so good because they were dating.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was between them was so believable because they've had that chemistry before. They've been dating. And I didn't mind that. After a while, I didn't mind her being the love interest in the movies.
I liked it because it's more... There's a few things in this movie that they did. They righted the wrongs from what the original trilogy didn't pull from the comics.
Yeah.
And these people, they pulled them from the comics. Yeah. We got web shooters.
Actually, that he built.
Yes.
That he was buying old watches and building web shooters.
I like that.
That was really... And he had like the leather harness straps for the gloves. That was really cool.
Yeah. That Gwen Stacy being there instead of Mary Jane. I know there's some more I'm probably not thinking of.
Even this Aunt May, it looks like they pulled her from the Ultimate Spider-Man series, where she's a little bit younger, she's more sassy, and she could keep up with Parker's quips, and they would go back and forth.
We'll get that in Homecoming, I think.
Homecoming.
They're in the right direction.
They're moving in the right direction.
I saw Aunt May on the screen, and I was like, oh man, if Mrs. Doubtfire had a sequel of the stern mom making sure that everything is okay.
Uh-huh.
I loved her in this.
Sally movie. Field.
Yeah, Sally Field. I loved her in Spider-Man.
I liked Martin Sheen as Uncle Ben.
He was good, but we didn't need him again.
We didn't. It could have already been done, but. And then on top of that, he's basically trying to compete with Cliff Robertson's performance.
Yeah,
really,
he's trying to. He's really trying to, and you can't. Cliff's emotional, just his emotional, like atmosphere that he brought.
Yeah.
He felt like a father figure.
Yeah,
he did. He felt like he was trying to be the father that Parker didn't have.
Although I'm not gonna lie, there's the scene where Peter's. Coming in late, and he's waiting for him on the porch.
Yeah.
He scolds him, and he tells him to go in there. Dude, I stood up, like, okay, sorry,
Dad.
Yeah, like that. that right there, that performance right there, was, that reminded me of my dad. But just that stern, you're going to go, you did something wrong, you need to go apologize.
Yeah, and squash it. Yeah. Take it back.
But I think one of the funniest things, and again, going back to, name drop him here, the Screen Junkies, mm-hmm. honest trailer of Amazing Spider-Man, they called it out. You're trying to do the same thing in this one, but you're not doing it. You're trying to find ways of saying, with great power comes great responsibility, without saying it. What did he say, like, with great morals, or with great...
With great responsibility, responsibility is wrought from great power. I don't know.
It's like... They're wording around it. They're really wording around it.
Yeah, it was so
and it
bad.
Was so awkward.
Don't say it or say it.
At the time, I feared that Martian just ad-libbed that line to try to make it work, and it just didn't work. It didn't go well. But yeah, they didn't need to have Uncle Ben die again. But I found it interesting that his motivation was to find the guy with the tattoo, mm-hmm. the masked assailant with the tattoo. That was a cool kind of, you know, Batman-esque way of finding the killer's always out there. I'm always out there. I'm always going to be on the look. I'm always going to help people because of that, because I might be able to catch him. But then that's pulling from Batman.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the whole Joe Chill and not knowing who killed his parents type of dynamic.
And he never actually caught him, did he?
No.
No. They just kind of dropped that thing, didn't they?
Yeah, they dropped it with him just helping people. He eventually kind of moved on, but he would keep catching people.
Yeah.
And that kind of went from there. But...
it's basically the first half of this movie is basically the same as the first half of the first Spider-Man movie, where it's, you know, the setup, you know, you got the origin. It's it's basically telling the same story just in different settings. Mm-hmm. It's like the same thing happens.
And they added skateboarding. They added skateboarding.
Okay. All right.
X Games skateboarding.
I'm going to say this, and I hope you, as a hardcore fan, you're gonna side with me on this one. One of my biggest cons in this for me, I know there's a big debate between, you know, Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire, who's the better Spider-Man. Me personally, I could not stand the portrayal of Peter Parker in this movie. In my mind, in this movie, Peter Parker wasn't nerdy enough. Like, he wasn't a scientific nerd that I'm used to seeing. Like, he was like almost too cool, but he was like an outside, like a almost like an awkward loner. Like he didn't fit in with the cool kids, but he wasn't a nerd either. Mm-hmm. Case in point, there's a scene specifically that hits us home for me on the nail on the head, where there's a little nerd being bullied by Flash. He's like, Flash has got him like on the table, like
putting his head, and then like the courtyard,
and at the courtyard, and Peter comes to save the kid from Flash. Like, in my mind, that kid
should have been Spider-Man.
That should have been Peter.
It should have been him.
You know, he shouldn't have been the one saving the nerd from Flash.
And that should have been him, except the fact that Andrew Garfield was like half a foot taller than Flash.
That's my another issue with this. Like, nothing. I like they got a skinny guy to get him, but he was way too tall.
He was way too tall.
Yeah.
Is it Andrew Garfield?
I wonder if they could find an actor that's short and skinny. We'll get to that later.
Tobey Maguire was the good nerdy Parker.
Yeah.
Andrew Garfield is the better Spider-Man.
I'll give you that.
And I think that's where people can't, they want both, and they try to, and that's where they decide with both. If I wanted a nerdy Peter Parker, I go with Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
If I wanted a better Spider-Man, I go with Andrew Garfield because he did the quips, he did the jokes. I mean, the scene with the carjacker where he's waiting in the back seat and him, like, you know, talking trash, you know, about having a costume and, you know, being a cop. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Or him even webbing up the guy, you know, fake snot and, you know, doing all that, hitting him in the balls. That's immature, but that fits Spider-Man's mentality whenever he's in the costume.
Mm-hmm. But and even then, there's a disconnect because I didn't get that was Peter Parker because he didn't act like...
He didn't. And that's the thing with Spider-Man and Parker is that you have... Parker's attitude, and you have, when he puts on the mask, he's a different person. Mm-hmm. He kind of morphs into his, you know, Jekyll and Hyde type thing, where he's Hyde as the, you know, wisecracking, you know, asshole that is Spider-Man.
But he's much of an asshole in this movie, I think. He's a douchebag to everybody, even whether he's Peter Parker or Spider-Man.
Yeah, he is to a degree on both.
I'm getting the expert to agree with me on this.
It's true because when Tobey Maguire, when he's in Parker mode, he's the same as Spider-Man mode. He's stuttering. He's you know, awkward, stuff like that. Garfield, when he's in Spider-Man, he's great, but then he's the same person that he is in Parker mode.
Yeah.
And even his quips back and forth between him and Aunt May they're funny, mm-hmm. and that sounds like a good relationship that they have. And I'm glad that she's not monologuing him all the time. That was a plus. But there wasn't a separation.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a separation of character. It was very much the same. And in this first movie, I think adding Spider-Man's parents as like a backstory, as well as adding his relationship with Gwen Stacy as a backstory, and then his relationship with Kurt Connors and with Captain Stacy all being backstories and mixing and mashing, this started to feel sort of Spider-Man 3-esque, where there's too much going on.
Yeah.
There's no seamless flow into anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's, oh, here's something else. Here's somebody else. Here's somebody else. He knows all these people. You better know that he knows all these people.
And even then, comparing this to the first Spider-Man movie, Norman, on his dying breath, don't tell Harry.
Yeah.
On this one, for Captain Stacy,
yeah.
Don't tell Gwen, or keep Gwen out of this.
Keep Gwen out of this.
Yeah.
Keep her out of this. But along with that, outside of Spider-Man 2, we get one of the best fight scenes, the lizard in the library.
That is my favorite scene in this movie.
I mean, the fight at school with him fighting through the hallways. They're both climbing on the walls. They're both, smashing up lockers.
Stan Lee with the headphones.
They're fighting in the background, and Parker and Spider-Man's like grabbing everything that the lizard's throwing at him and pulling it back.
Yeah.
So that was really well done, because again, that's part of Spider-Man's motif, where even though he's fighting somebody, he's still protecting collateral damage. Mm-hmm. He's still protecting everybody else.
Yeah.
And him saving Stan Lee several times from things getting thrown at him.
Without him even knowing. Without him even knowing.
Yeah.
Was great. And then he walks out not knowing what just happened. Mm-hmm. And the room's a disaster.
I want to see like a deleted scene of Stan Lee walking back into that room after the fight scene.
that would have been great if he did that.
But that's one of my pros in this whole movie is kind of going back to the way I felt about how they handled Dr. Octopus.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they did a good job handling a real life lizard. Because when you think about lizard in real life, come on, he's a villain, he's a big lizard.
They also played up to like New York mythology with alligators in the sewer.
Put
the lizard in the sewer with a secret lair.
I like that.
That worked with New York mythology or New York stories.
They made the origin of the lizard in a real life setting plausible enough for me. I didn't have to suspend this, but I was like, you know what? That makes sense. I can see that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running with it.
All you need to suspend disbelief is the fact that there is the little thing that they created, the little chemical, whatever, to help regenerate limbs. Mm-hmm. That's all you need
to replace limbs.
Limbs. And that's not far-fetched, really. I mean,
in
this day and age of science and whatever, it's not out there. So it's plausible, I guess. But
it worked. It definitely worked.
You mentioned that everything was they were introducing too many things at once, and it kind of confused, it muddied up the plot line.
It did.
I actually didn't get that vibe until we got to Amazing Spider-Man number 2.
Well, we'll get to that.
We'll get that one.
I did, going back to one of the things that you liked about Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, being skinny and everything like that, going back and rewatching it again, there's a lot of cool visual shots of him mid-air in classic comic book poses.
McFarlane poses.
Yes.
Yeah. McFarlane poses.
And if you know, listeners, if you don't know Tom McFarlane, Spider-Man pose, what we're talking about, he's very, his legs get all kind of sprout out.
Very gymnastic.
Yeah, very gymnastic.
I mean, this guy's been doing some DDP yoga.
Like, he can fold in half almost.
Yeah. I mean, whenever McFarlane has done these drawing sessions, and he always says that people always come back to his Spider-Man art, he said he wanted to put him into poses that a normal human could not do, only Spider-Man can do it.
To make it
more comic book, and to make it more like he could do anything. He's very acrobatic. And they put these poses in there, and that way they were great. And that's what I liked too. And they included his spaghetti webbing too. Whenever they would do the close-up shots, you would see the knots coming out and the webbing would spiral out, where like spaghetti, versus the first movie where it's just glued, like it looks like dry glue.
Yeah.
This one was very McFarlane heavy with the special effects and the webbing. So,
well, you can tell in the first trilogy on some of those close-up shots, it's just an actual prop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the train scene where he's like holding it. But in this movie, it looks all CG.
It looks all CG, but it I think it helps because again,
I don't mind it at all.
It helps with the details.
It helps with all the details. And this Spider-Man the Mark Webb series is very McFarlane based on art, posing, the shading, the webbing. Everything's very McFarlane based with the details and the special effects.
And when I first started getting into Spider-Man, Todd McFarlane was the artist on that.
He was the king of 90s.
Yeah.
He was the king artist.
When did you start getting into Spider-Man? Was that around the same time or were you before that?
I was probably 92 or 93.
Okay, so May, like right at the tail end of that, maybe right before, right after that?
It was...
Mark Bagley was probably the...
My first intro issue... was the Spider-Man annual for August of 92, where it was the story where Spider-Man fights Dr. Doom.
See,
and that was a turning point for me.
Okay.
That was a turning point. My actual start of collecting Spider-Man issues was Ultimate Spider-Man number 1, where the Carnage saga started off with Eric Larson taking on artwork.
Really? Ultimate Spider-Man was your...
Spider-Man Unlimited. Spider-Man Unlimited number 1.
Yeah, Maximum Carnage was my...
Yeah, that was the kickoff.
That was my first, like, I'm collecting this shit. But before that, I first got into it to the 35th anniversary with the holograms.
Yeah.
That was my first Spider-Man.
But I did Spider-Man Unlimited number 1 because at the time I saw X-Men Unlimited number 1 where they're trying to Antarctica. I had that Fantastic Four number 1 and I saw the Spider-Man one with Carnage. I'm like, holy crap. I know there's a game coming out.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to start reading. Because I had the old issue with that one. That was really the turning point for me for Spider-Man. Well, I'll get into that later. But with Amazing, it was very McFarlane based on a lot of details. If you're a comic book fan, especially a McFarlane fan, there's a lot of small details that they pay tribute to McFarlane on in the movie series. And then with this movie, you get the fight scenes. Again, they're pretty vicious because I know McFarlane did the Torment miniseries with Lizard as the main villain, and that was a brutal fight, and we got a lot of brutality with like the scratching and the clawing at Spider-Man. That was really well done, but overall I think my only drawback is that you include a prelude to his parents and then you also include this Uncle Ben's death, and that's two conflicting parental stories that don't really add up. It's either have one or the other. And then there was even a rumor that Ben was going to survive the entire film and he would die in the second one, which I thought would have been...
I would have been okay with that.
That would have been pretty cool because that would have prolonged it.
In Ultimate Spider-Man, Uncle Ben didn't die until like with the fourth or fifth issue or something like that. He lasted... I mean, he lasted,
I think, until issue 6 or 7.
Yeah, something like
he
that.
He lasted a while.
The first arc,
He lasted a while because it was after he actually got the stripes on his costume or the webbing on his costume that he died. Because I know in the Ultimate... He had the plain suit, his wrestling suit that he used, and it was after that, after Ben died, is when he got the webbing on his suit. But I mean, there's rumors that he was going to survive till the second one, and I was fine with that. I really thought that was a good build up because then you could kind of see the build up between
and Mary it wouldn't have been Ben. The same thing.
Yeah, it would have been the same thing, but you would have got more of like the father figure aspect of what Martin Sheen could have brought to that movie instead of, you know, then you see the conflict of I want to know my real dad versus who I have as my dad right now. That would have been a good conflict.
Or do you think they just wanted to get all that out of the way? Like, just knock it out, get it out, so it's not
even...
Who
knows? Who knows?
Anything else that you'll want to say about Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 1?
I thought overall it was a good step towards the right direction. It's like, if you're going to restart from scratch, this is a good base. Not as good as the original Spider-Man from Sam Raimi, but you have potential there to make this work if you want to do two or three more.
I'm so torn about Andrew Garfield as Peter. That was my big takeaway in the costume. But that gets fixed in the next movie.
But one thing I do have to point out with this movie, this is the first time in a Spider-Man movie where the villain's trying to take over the city. Not just fight Spider-Man.
True.
He's trying to take over the city with like toxin or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
Well,
has never been done.
Dr. Octopus?
He was doing experiments. He was just trying to do experiments, and Spider-Man strode up to stop
him. He wanted to prove to himself
that it messed up at the end. Okay.
But he wasn't trying to take over the city and trying to change everybody in the city to be like him.
Yeah.
This was the first time where a villain was going after the entire New York City.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was different. I enjoyed that part. I thought that was something.
It was a true villain.
Yeah, as a true supervillain.
Yeah.
Aspect.
Okay, so for this one, I think a lot of people, it's not like jarring differences between anything else, but you know, a lot of people that are either pro Amazing Spider-Man or they're pro Tobey Maguire's run as Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular one, Rotten Tomatoes, critics have it at 72%.
Okay.
Fans, the audience, 77%.
Okay.
That's up quite a bit from the last.
And I think a lot of people were still kind of turned off because of.
part three?
So many years after part three. There wasn't a big gap. It was like straight away.
Yeah.
It was straight away.
Like too soon for a reboot.
Yeah.
Type thing. So, yeah, like I said, not a whole lot to say more about the first Spider-Man movie. Now, moving on to Amazing Spider-Man 2. Admittedly, I revisited all these movies with the exception of this movie. Yeah, just because I don't own it, and it was playing. I couldn't find it. Whatever. So I didn't get a chance to watch it before we started recording. So I have vague memories of this movie. I know my favorite part about this movie is the costume.
Yes, the costume. This is probably the most accurate Spider-Man
costume
I
love the eyes.
Got.
The Bagley eyes.
Yeah, the eyes, the suit, no 3D webbing, you know, the shoes, the boots, Matt, everything was...
It was Spider-Man.
Straight
it was,
off
it
the
was
comic.
Yeah.
Straight up Spider-Man.
And not only that, like, even the visuals, like, on the trailers was... Anytime you see, if it's done right, if you see Spider-Man in the red and blue with, like, a bright outside lighting, it looks pretty.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting some shots of that in the trailers. I was like, okay, I think we might be onto something. And that aspect I enjoyed. But everything else, it seems like they just didn't learn their lesson from Spider-Man 3. And that's my biggest takeaway was just, it was just too much, too crowded.
Tell me
your thoughts.
there are a lot of things I think they got right, things that I think they got wrong.
And refresh my memory, because like I said, I'm...
Okay, let's start with the stuff they got right.
I like Electro's look. They went the ultimate route. They cast Jamie Foxx as Electro. They went the blue route instead of the classic starfish.
Yeah. That would be hard to pull off.
I like Electro's look, and I like that they're making Electro more of... he's just looking for companionship. He's looking for a friend more so, because that's what he was in the comics. He was a loner.
In Ultimate?
In Ultimate, he was a hitman. Kingpin brought him in to take care of his business. And in the 616, he was...
the main Marvel line.
The main Marvel line. He was more so the companion to Shocker or Vulture or Doc Ock.
Just another thug type thing?
He would befriend people and he would shadow them.
Oh, okay.
So he was always looking for that companionship to be somebody's friend. And so that kind of... They took...
Like
Ultimate's look, like
it all makes sense.
It all comes full circle.
Right.
but they took Ultimate's look, but they gave him a 616's backstory, sort of.
Okay.
And I kind of enjoy that, because I think the blue look fits more of the like a contrasting color with all the other villains. Because at this time, you know, this was when speculations come out with, we're going to do a Venom movie.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do a Sinister Six movie.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do this movie. We're going to do this and this and this, which will lead into Spider-Man 3. Which will, again, be another Spidey and maybe one or two heroes versus the Sinister Six and possibly somebody else. And going into it, again, fucking Avi Arad.
Now, is he still pulling right around here?
Yeah, he is. He's still doing it with the Mark Webb stuff.
Let's talk about that real quick. Mark Webb, come on, is that the only reason he got these movies? His last name,
possibly.
Okay,
possibly.
Continue. I don't know.
I mean, was he the director for Social Network?
Was he?
Well, was he? I mean, that would have been perfect. The World Wide Web and Mark Webb.
Oh, now you can start in the Wikipedia.
But Avi Arad again. Because in the first movie, they introduced Osborn, the company.
Right.
But you never saw Norman, which was great.
I did like that, too.
I like keeping him mystery. I like that they listened to fans and they didn't bring in another J. Jonah Jameson. They kept that in mystery. You see Parker send in photos to J. Jonah Jameson, and we saw responses back, but never a physical person, which I thought was really great. But again, fans, Avi Arad had made the comment that with the other movies, the biggest selling toy was the Green Goblin. So, we'll bring in the Green Goblin. And they got an actor who played a great Harry Osborn with Dane DeHaan. He is good. If you've seen the movie Chronicle, he's amazing. He's really good.
I saw him in something else, too, and I remember the actor before this movie came out. I can't remember what else I saw him in.
I'll tell you what I remember him from,
Metallica.
Through the Never.
Yeah,
he's the roadie that's trying to find the bag that the band needs, which we never know it's in the bag. But
leave it to this guy. To
Metallica. But yeah, he is a good actor, and I thought he did a really good Harry Osborn. But the point of the movie was that this is supposed to be Harry's way of building up an army to fight Spider-Man. So you have Electro as the main story. You've got Parker and Gwen. You know, Gwen's going to leave to go to England to go to school, which is, again, following the comics. Their backstory, Parker seeing visions of her dead dad. Thought that was really good. That constant reminder of don't mess it up. Don't mess it up. You know, do the right thing. I thought that was really good. I didn't like him flip-flopping back and forth. It's either date Gwen or don't. But don't keep, you know, don't shuffle it too much. Big Show's had more face heel turns in the same night.
But didn't in the first trilogy, he kept, like, especially in part two,
he couldn't make up his mind. And there were times where he wanted to just tell her.
Yeah.
That scene when he's calling her on the phone and he ran out of change. Yeah. He's like, I just need to tell you, baby.
But even then, in the first movie, he was like, I'll be there as your friend.
Oh, at the funeral. End, at the end of the funeral.
So that was the first push away. And the second one, in their coffee shop right before the Doc Ock attacks, he says, I don't love you, pretty much. So he's almost like leading her on to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So this is the same
but
thing.
But he keeps her at bay. But this one, they're dating and they break up. And they're dating and they break up. And it's back and forth. And that's where I kind of get frustrated, because then it becomes what's that TV show, Moonlighting, where there's that tension there,
right?
And there's no payoff. There's no real payoff. But with this one, it just keeps going back and forth. And I would have had them date and just stay dating, where every time he's about to make a decision, Captain Stacy pops up. That's his conscience. Captain Stacy pops up. Right. Keep it simple like that throughout the whole movie. That way, and even when she's telling him, no, I want to do something, Stacy's popping up and just shaking his head. That would have been great. That would have been a good reminder, not that kind of complex story. And now we're also adding in Parker's parents part two with the plane and the secret subway station.
Oh, so there was more, lab, it was more of that too,
yeah,
right?
The secret lab, the tokens to get in there.
See, I don't remember any of this.
Yeah, Aunt May finds Parker's map of him trying to find the killer, and she's like, what's going on? It's just...
Does she find out that he's Spider?
No.
Okay.
No. But she sees his map of him trying to figure things out. And it starts becoming diluted with a lot of unnecessary backstory, a lot of unnecessary things that they wanted to do. And again, they wanted to tie this off with spinoffs to explain those things, and then bring it back for Spider-Man 3 with him finding the Sinister Six. Which, again, that sounds like a great idea. Put that burden on somebody else. But my only point is that after Spider-Man fights Electro, they should have ended it there. And then branch off with the Sinister Six movie with Harry building up his army, building up his rogues, building up his friends to do something to take on Spider-Man.
Harry, you're making too much sense right now.
Two felt like it was incomplete with so much stuff that they left unanswered.
I just remember... We talked about in part three stuff being shoehorned in.
Yeah.
Rhino being shoehorned in this thing.
I liked him being shoehorned in the very beginning as like the throwaway villain.
But not at the end. The
very easy.
It's like he's villain. A bookend. He's like a bookend, right?
Yeah, like he's a bookend. At the end, have him teasing the fight, but that should have been more of Harry behind the scenes, like, hey, I gave this guy a suit. He's gonna take care of it, and then ending it there.
Is he in this? I remember the last scene, but in the. Is Rhino in the suit in the beginning?
No. He's just a two-bit robber.
Yeah, he's in a truck, right?
She's a truck driver.
Okay, yeah.
But
okay.
Even his little jokes of him and his Russian accent are freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
Because he thinks he's better than Spider-Man. He's trying to shoot him and he's better. Which, that's great. They found Paul Giamatti. Great actor.
Right.
Great role for Mecha Rhino. Great, you know, casting for that. But again, I think them turning Harry into Goblin... too soon, having him fight Spider-Man as Goblin, killing off Gwen, was so rushed. That whole segment felt
because Harry wasn't in he wasn't in the first movie.
No, he wasn't.
And
he wasn't even mentioned at all.
He wasn't introduced to anything.
Yeah.
Nothing. If they would have like panned over like, you know, Parker at summer camp with, you know, like little boy, him and Harry, you know, science camp or something like that. That would have been a good
or some kind of acknowledgement of, hey, you know, I wish Harry was here or something.
Yeah, like, you know, I wish Harry was here. Or even Gwen saying something like in the first movie, like, you know, like, remember me, you, and Harry went to camp? Something like that would have helped kind of start throwing the seeds out there to kind of, you know, plant thoughts. But again, they got a great actor.
Yeah.
And they messed it up with him.
They rushed it.
I think him, you know, with like, one of the parts I like is when Harry puts on the leather jacket, he gets you know, pretty much kicked out of his own building, and he goes to Ravencroft and he's breaking Electro out. That's a good Harry where he's building up his army.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that maybe they had ideas and then like maybe mid through production or something or pre-production, they thought that this is when maybe they started getting serious talks with Marvel, and they said, "And we'll stop it here not do a third movie."
I remember during the production movie, you would hear comments like Andrew Garfield not happy, or Dane DeHaan not happy, or certain actors in the movie not happy while they're filming. Something's happening. There's rewrites. There's this and this happening, and I think there were a lot of rewrites that were done from producers because they wanted certain things in. They wanted certain iconic and scenic moments that they wanted to do that maybe Mark Webb was probably put in the same position that Raimi was, that he was forced to do stuff that he didn't want to do. And that's kind of sad because, again, this movie had the best Spider-Man costume to date.
Absolutely.
They had the actors. They had, you know, good things. I liked Jamie Foxx's Electro. It was very... When he got angry, and he was like, you know, that anger and that rage, he was scary as Electro. You could feel that he wanted to surge out and blast somebody to bits. Like when he pops into the guy's office and he like electrocutes him, then brings it back to life just to kill him again.
Maybe I want to like the how they did Electro and they went the ultimate route. I dig that part. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm still kind of stuck on the fact that maybe it's kind of like a Topher syndrome for me.
Yeah.
Where I didn't care too much for Jamie Foxx playing Electro.
I kind of forgot it was Jamie Foxx after the blue.
Yeah.
You kind of forget that it's Jamie Foxx because they fix his gap in his mouth. They fix his nose. They do all the things that are his...
CGI's a hell of a drug.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly prosthetics that did that.
Okay. Yeah. I'll give you that.
But most of the stuff that made Jamie Foxx look how he is, they took away.
Yeah.
So he became, you know, this kind of enforcer that Harry needed that I thought worked and should have kept going.
Yeah.
Sure, Spider-Man defeats him at the end, but then have him come back in like Osborn's lab, like a secret lab where he can reform and repower up, and he's waiting to come back.
Yeah.
Instead of getting the ending that we got.
It's kind of like a Sandman where you think you can beat him.
Yeah.
But a little grain survives somehow and then he can reform.
Like, you know, a little spark survives and he's able to reappear, but he needs to recharge up.
Well, regardless, Amazing Spider-Man 2 didn't do so well as far as Amazing Spider-Man. Rotten Tomato critic score gave it a 52%, so it went down from 72 to 52.
Wow.
And then the audience score went down a little bit to 65%. So audience
they're more forgiving than most people.
Yeah, right. Apparently now.
For me, my biggest pro of this move of part two. The second Spider-Man movie, Sam Raimi, there's definitive scenes where Spider-Man is established as your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Well, the kid's crossing the street and he saves him and tells him, hey, look both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or when he almost gets run over and he tells the two kids that are looking on the sidewalk, eat your vegetables. Like, that's what my mama says. nothing said neighborhood Spider-Man more than the end of the movie where the little kid steps up and Spider-Man comes behind and is like, hey, bro.
I got this.
Thanks for looking out. When he tells the kid at the beginning
with the science project, he goes, did you build this?
Yeah.
This is great. How old are you, for the fans, what they should have done, they should have cast a different kid for that if they wanted to go with more sequels.
For Miles Morales?
For Miles.
Yeah.
For Miles. Have that be a little African-American boy building a science project that plants a seed for Miles. If they were to go further on with the movies.
Right.
Peter gets married, has kids, he's like, I can't handle it, hands it down to Miles.
And Miles eventually takes over, you know, kind of do that.
Well, he doesn't just hand it over to Miles if you don't off Ultimate.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah. If I was to ask you, could you rank the first five movies in a particular order from best to worst?
Best to worst?
Yeah.
2-1, Amazing 1, Amazing 2, and 3.
All right.
I would actually flip-flop Spider-Man 3 with Amazing 2. Like, I would hold Spider-Man 3 over Amazing 2 just because, at least, like we mentioned earlier, for all the flaws that Spider-Man 3 had with so much going on, all those loose ends were tied. Yeah. And with the Amazing Spider-Man 2, it felt like an unfinished movie. Like, at least for a train wreck, Spider-Man 3 still holds itself as its own movie. You can watch that from start to finish. You get a beginning, you get an end. With Amazing Spider-Man 2, it feels like... where's the rest of it? You start. You already started something here.
It's in part three that never got made.
You finished it, but then you kept going. So where does the keep going stop? You know,
it's like Mario Brothers 2.
Yeah,
it never happened.
So yeah. He-Man 2 never happened.
Yeah, I'd probably say maybe 2-1, Amazing 1, and then it's a toss-up between the last two. I would probably say 3 and then Amazing 2, because 3, for all intents and purposes, for better or worse, there's a lot of memorable stuff that people remember about that.
Yeah, the dancing scene.
Well, black suit and everything black else. Suit. So, and Sandman was really cool.
Sandman was
I would say Sandman over Electro, I think, as far as villain goes.
Both had good fights, though.
But Amazing 2 had a better costume.
Yeah.
That costume, man, it's way up there.
The costume itself is what really does it. And then the subway fight with Sandman versus the Electro fight at the end with the cones.
Yeah.
They're both really good. They're both really good.
Okay. Anything else about the Amazing...
Well, the ending scene with this. Okay. Again, this is what got people talking was the ending after credit scene where the stranger from the very first movie, at the end of the first movie, the trench coat with the hat, he walks through the bottom corridor of Oscorp. He's walking by all these doors, and you see Dr. Octopus's arms, Vulture's wings. Originally, there was a globe that had the black symbiote suit, the black goo, but they replaced that the mask, the chameleon mask in the thing.
Okay.
Wasn't one of them empty because the rhino suit was already
taken? The rhino suit was taken out. Yeah. So one was empty. So he had all these implements for the Sinister Six that was their plan. Their plan was to make a Sinister Six movie with Harry gathering everybody. They're going to pull off a bank heist to fund a better warehouse, which would lead into Spider-Man 3 with him fighting Sinister Six. And then the other movie would have been a Silver Sable Wall Pack movie, which would have Sable and Spider-Man fighting Sinister Six. And possibly Black Cat somewhere in there, too.
That sounds very ambitious.
That's what their plan was. And when DC heard about this, they rushed the hell with Suicide Squad to get it out there. Because six villain team, being the good guys, or you're going for the Ocean's 11 villains.
Right. Anti-heroes.
The anti-heroes. Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
And then you forced Joker and Harley in that. To them, that was a guaranteed success. When Sinister Six died off, there's no competition.
Yeah.
They had no competition to go off of. Mm-hmm. And so, that sadly happened. And then, Spider-Man.
But, to all the bad things that happens, it all turns around and leads into very good things.
Yeah.
And I think on that note, we're going to...
We're going to go to the movies?
We're going to go to the movies. And we're going to go check out Spider-Man Homecoming. And then we're going to be back with a brand new episode reviewing our thoughts on Spider-Man Homecoming.
Do we need to see Civil War first?
Oh, like you haven't seen it. All right. Well, until our next episode, I hope you enjoyed our recap of the original Spider-Man movie franchises before this new Marvel era that we're in.
Okay. Where can they find us?
Oh, well, you can find us at PopCultureRewind.com. Also on our social media, Facebook.com/PopCultureRewind. What's that other one?
The Twitter machine?
That one.
PopCultureRWND.
Yeah, that's how.
Okay.
Yeah.
Once we get enough scratch, we'll buy the vowels.
There you go.
Why don't you just put pop cultural, bracket forward, or bracket backwards, rewind. The rewind button?
Son of a bitch.
You can still change it.
See, we can't accept that he's right because we have ego. And right, on top of that, he's going to want royalties.
Yes.
I want a penny from every fucking click.
From every retweet.
Not views. Clicks.
I want retweets. Not scrolls. Retweets.
All right. Well, thanks, Aaron, for joining us on this episode.
No problem.
And until next time, always remember to pop your culture.
Keep it thwip.
Yeah.
There you go.
Listen to me, son.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're a lot like your father. You really are, Peter, and that's a good thing. But your father lived by a philosophy, a principle, really. He believed that if you could do good things for other people, you had a moral obligation to do those things. That's what's at stake here. Not choice, responsibility.
That's nice. That's great. It's all well and good, so where is he?
What?
Where is he? Where's my dad?
I'm not the same man I used to be, Peter. I used to be arrogant enough to believe that it was my destiny to save people, to save the world, my work. But somehow, after everything I did to hide my work, it still found its way to the only person on Earth who could possibly unlock it. And I realize now maybe it was never my destiny to save anything. It's yours, son. And with great power comes great responsibility. I love you, son.
Cartoon. Oh, man,
I've made a huge mistake.
Those power mullets back in the day,
right?
The parallel red lines in Osborne's hair.
He's always had those. But Alice Smite's little power mullet with the buzz cut.
That's strictly 90s right there.
I think that's that Lex Luger like mullet.
I don't know, man. Lex Luger had a pretty killer mullet. just saying. All right. Y'all ready to do this?
Oh, man. Do we
Chris!
Yeah, sure. Why not?